PSNY. How's it going, folks? This is Bleacher Creatures episode 159, brought to you as always by XL Media, Crossing Broad, Elite Sports NY, Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. We made a little stop at the local animal shelter on the way to Bleacher Creatures today. All right, now come on, say hello. Say hello.
Oh my God. You stop at the animal shelter? That's how you're going to introduce me own show?
We rescued James Kelly from upstate New York. Welcome back. You are back on the market, if the rumors are true.
Back on the market. Yeah, that's true. And yeah, obviously can't get into why I'm back in the market. Obviously, Josh, you know the story because I talked to you about it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm back on the market. I'm excited. I'm more excited than anything that I'm actually going to be able to watch baseball again this year. Cause you know, one of the downsides to waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning for work is you can't really watch a 7 o'clock baseball game. It's not really in the cards anymore.
Yeah, no.
So I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Well, we're good to have you back. Alec, you kind of marathoned here from the airport too.
Yes, I did. Yeah. My sister's in town visiting. So I nice. Like, can you pick me up? And I'm like, I guess what's a big brother for?
Yeah,
you going to the Phillies game while she's in town?
Well, my girlfriend and I might go. She's at my sister's gonna be so busy with school work stuff. She probably is not gonna be able to go to any game, but we're thinking about going to the Friday game against the Rockies.
Nice.
So yeah, we'll be haven't decided anything for sure yet, but I think that's gonna be the game plan.
All right, so James, we are currently, as we record this, it is the top of the fifth inning. Michael King has a 2-1 lead over the Angels, and Shohei Ohtani looks like he just fouled one off into the seats. He has another count, 2-2. So it's kind of a frustrating time for the Yankees. The pitching staff is banged up. Giancarlo Stanton did his annual stint to the injured list. But do we just have to get used to the fact that Stan's going to be injured, or like, I don't know, man. It's just so annoying every time it happens.
Yeah. I mean, come on. We know now. We know with Giancarlo Stanton, this isn't anything new. I think the real disappointing thing was that right off the bat, it's 6 weeks. When you hear, you know, what was it? A hamstring issue.
Yeah. Grade two.
Yeah. Yeah. When you hear hamstring issue, your first thought is like, all right, maybe a couple weeks, like maybe we'll put him on the 15-day IL, even if he doesn't really need it, we'll give him a couple extra games to ramp back up. But no, right to 6 weeks. That's not ideal for the New York Yankees or for Giancarlo Stanton.
And Michael King just struck out Shohei Ohtani swinging.
Okay. I like Michael King's looked pretty good. I liked him last week in his last appearance.
He's still kind of ramping the velocity up to where it needs to go. But the good news is he's still spinning the ball as he needs to. So he'll get there. He's still ramping himself up.
Yeah. Even that sinker, 95 in the upper inside corner to a left-handed batter. That's a tough pitch to throw.
Yeah. You know what? Let's stick with Shohei Ohtani. So Brendan Cuddy, now with the illustrious Athletic, with those folks over the New York Times, he put out a story today that the Yankees, they're kind of dropping hints they're going to at least try for Ohtani. I personally don't see it happening, just from a money standpoint. Alec, what do you think about this? Do you think the Yankees will actually pursue Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah, I mean,
because from a fantasy baseball perspective, just in terms of like looking into the future, it's fun to think about.
Oh, absolutely. And like, you know, we can for sure dream about it. But it just strikes me as one of those things where if you're a general manager and you're not checking in with Ohtani's agent, then you probably should be fired, because that's honestly the bare minimum you should be doing for, you know, not being hyperbolic here, like a generational player. You know, it's literally been 100 years since we've last seen a player do what he's been doing. So look, I mean, Ohtani said some pretty nice things about New York and Yankee Stadium yesterday. Judge was kind of playing coy a bit. So, you know, it's the Yankees. You can never count them out from making the big move. But I personally, unless there's been a big mental shift in Ohtani as a player to where he's like, okay, I've established myself on the smaller market, less demanding, you know, coast that is the West Coast and with the Angels. Unless he's now suddenly like, hey, I'm ready for that spotlight. I am ready to, you know, be in the jungle. I don't see him wanting to come to New York as much as I don't see New York having the financial ability to get him. So I don't know. You know, it for now we can dream, but that's not something I see very realistic, you know, in happening.
James, what about you?
Oh, yeah, come on. Shohei Ohtani's not going to be a Yankee. We know this. We know this already. We knew when he first came over and he was looking at teams, he didn't even want to come meet with the East Coast teams because he wanted to be on the West Coast anyway. He wanted to be there where, you know, people in Japan could still watch his games because of the time shift. He didn't want to be playing at 7 o'clock Eastern time. That would have been too late. And you know, let's be honest. Who would willingly come to the New York media market, especially Shohei Ohtani? Like, it's going to be a circus. He's never wanted that. He's never been that guy. So I just think the West Coast is just where he belongs. And
okay, but how is the Dodgers going to be any different, though?
Yeah, but the Dodgers will be the same. I think they'll have a better chance to sign him. In fact, if I'm calling it right now, it's probably 50-50 between the Dodgers and the San Diego Padres.
I was going to say, like, the
no
Padres...
limits on their money.
Yeah, the Padres. Can we appreciate for a second how the San Diego Padres are literally spending old Dodgers money?
Oh yeah, I love like, it.
That always gets glossed over every time.
We've been saying this for years, Josh. There's no such thing as a poor organization. There's only selfish owners.
Yes, small market teams, small market owners,
as much as they can. Yeah, there's no such thing as a small market team in Major League Baseball. They're all worth over $1 billion. They all have the money to put together a $100 million payroll. That's possible.
But like, I'm talking more about the fact, like, over the offseason, I'm saying, oh shit, like the Padres are spending a shitload of money. Yeah. Like, oh, like,
but this is what you see when you actually invest in your team and they're selling out every single home game, and San Diego's never been more hyped about it. Like, wow, this is crazy. We invested in good players and now people want to come watch and spend money and buy beer and food. And wow, what a thought.
And yet you still lost to the Rockies twice.
That's early season, my guy. Early season. Let's hit the brakes on that.
Hey. You want to hear? You want to hear early season? Like, I should show you the screenshots of this guy in the group chat right here.
Oh no.
No. Like, Alec is prone to going full Yankees Twitter.
Oh no.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So you know what it is. All right. I have a perfect analogy for this.
Okay.
Any hockey fans out there?
Yeah. Okay.
Did anyone see what happened to the Toronto Maple Leafs in game one of last night?
You told me what happened.
They got their shit kicked in by the Tampa Bay Rays, Tampa Bay Lightning. Wow, crossover. Mind you, the Tampa Bay Lightning knocked out the Toronto Maple Leafs last year. And if I remember correctly, the Maple Leafs had a 3-1 or 3-2 series lead and lost games 6 and 7. To extend the drought of being unable to go past the first round to however many years it is. And every time something like last night happens to the Toronto Maple Leafs, you have the one side of the fan base that are like ready to burn down the city. And then you have the one side of the fan base saying like, you guys are overreacting, but there is a middle ground. And the middle ground is last night, it wasn't just about that loss. It's about the other X amount of years where they failed to get past the first round, even when they had series leads and or leads in game 7 against the Boston Bruins and blew it in the third period. Now, for the Yankees.
Oh, this is a Greco-level rant, by the way.
Look at this garbage. Part of the meltdowns is not just in that moment. It's the years of the same shit happening over and over again. So excuse me for getting pissed off, even though it is fully within our rights to expect shit like this to happen. Excuse me for getting pissed off when Giancarlo Stanton has a grade 2 hamstring strain when he's running 60% to second base.
Yeah. But the Yankees always make the playoffs, man. They always make it. We just got to be healthy then. We're good. And everything's fine.
I am on record from, I think it was last week when Danny was on, where I said, I am fine with shifting the mindset to where, you know, after what everything the Philadelphia Phillies did last year, I'm fine with shifting the mindset is just get into the play-in. Anything can happen when you get hot, right? Maybe the idea of winning the division isn't necessarily as important as it used to be, especially when you have, if the rotation is healthy, three actual aces that can run out, you know, the two games of the play-in round and then game one of the American League Division Series. Fine, whatever. But I would like to see the Yankees just come out and, you know, I'm not talking about last year where they had the like incredible run and then they had that midseason collapse and then they found their footing at the end. It's just, there are some moments already in this season where it's just the same old with the, with this Yankee team. And that's what's the most frustrating part.
Yeah, I get that. I look back at 2019 and all the injury problems that we had that year and just think like every time I opened my phone, somebody else was hurt. And I was like, all right, whatever, whatever. This season doesn't even count anyway. It's not even a real season. And of course, the Yankees go on to make the playoffs anyway. And, you know, we all know how that year ended. Not well.
Yeah.
But like, and, you know, like the Stanton injury is its thing. You know, we know that's what we should expect from him at this point. I'm patient with him because he's historically been one of our best postseason hitters over the last few years, like whatever. But I'm still sitting there having a hard time wanting to buy into the team as much as maybe some fans tell me I should, when I'm still looking at the big issue that is the 7, 8, and 9 hole in the lineup and the lower half of the lineup just overall not producing at a level that, you know, a championship team should be producing at. And look, we and the Tampa Bay Rays going on that incredible run to start the season, you know, I understand they're playing quadruple A teams up to a certain point and like whatever, but can we sit there and say the Yankees would have been able to go on a run like that? You know, that's where part of my frustration comes from and where I go on those rants, because it's like I would just love to see the Yankees do something like that and sustain it. Or like not sustain an undefeated season, but just, you know, just show up and be like, we're the big dogs on campus and you guys are beneath us and we'll play like it, you know?
Yeah. Well, that was relaxing last year when they did get off to that hot start where you're sitting there, you know, May, June, July, kind of sitting there thinking, this division's kind of over already. We've been in cruise control for weeks. We are just coasting to the playoffs at this point, and we're going to get that first round bye. Like we're confident. We're good. It's better. Yeah, it's definitely better than early season. You're playing pretty well. You're winning series. That's the important thing. Yeah. But you're looking across the division and saying, okay, well, the Rays got off to this crazy start, and obviously that's not going to hold up. But was it enough that when you look at the numbers in late September, you're kind of looking at games back and saying, this is a little tighter than maybe I thought it was going to be?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Rays are just – God, I cannot wait for Kevin Cash to get into the Hall of Fame for winning a World Series with a team that's not the Rays, because like that team is all him. Let's be honest. It's all Kevin Cash. He is their greatest asset and they probably pay him like less than $1 million a year.
That'd be criminal.
Yeah. The Rays don't, that's classic poor organization. Poor. Just don't, they don't have any money to go around. Not a dollar.
Yeah, it's and wow, Franchi Cordero dogs that fly ball
for Trout.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I'm on an even further delay than you guys are.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cheap hit on weak contact, but like, come on, dude, at least try. That
was straight off the label.
Yeah.
Well, that's why it'd be nice to have Harrison Bader back, be able to put Judge back in right field.
Or he's still defensively. He's still taking taking batting like practice.
Could have made a run on that.
Yeah.
Harrison Bader's close to back. I like that. That's going to extend the lineup a little bit and hopefully help a little. I'm still waiting for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa to be gone. I know why they re-signed him. I know that they wanted to try to at least get something back for him, and he was already there. We didn't re-sign him for that much. It's like, all right, maybe we can get like a no-name reliever that turns into Clay Holmes again. But at this point, like, what is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa's trade value? You're not even playing him, really.
Yeah, I mean, like, the worst part of it all is that once Bader comes back, IKF is probably still going to have a job just because A, Stan's hurt, and B, it's easier to cut Willie fucking Calhoun loose.
Yeah, and it just it makes no sense that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is the guy who just keeps dodging that bullet.
Yeah,
it's like everything we've seen has made me think less of Isaiah Kiner-Falefa as a baseball player since he came to New York. I've gotten progressively more and more negative about him and about his ability to contribute winning baseball. Again, you know, one of the best baseball players on earth because he's in the major leagues. But
yeah,
when you're talking about that difference between, okay, are you an actually productive player or are you nothing? Isaiah Kiner-Falefa can't field. He runs okay. He's fast. But he's, you know, he's not on the base.
Okay, wait.
Even then, he doesn't get on the base.
So if Isaiah Kiner-Falefa can't field, then why is there such a discrepancy between the outs above average and the defensive run saved?
It's just the way they're measured, I guess.
It makes no sense.
One maybe weights range more than just actual fielding ability, arm strength. I don't know. All these defensive metrics are different. And all I've gotten from them is that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is not a defensive shortstop. He's just not. And he never will be. Like, it's not like he's developing. Like, Anthony Volpe might end this year being a below average defensive shortstop. That very well could happen, even though he's looked pretty good so far this year.
Yeah.
Obviously, defense isn't his strong suit as a prospect. That was never the thing that was going to get him to the major leagues. But if you're choosing between that and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, that's fine. And Anthony Volpe has room to improve because he's so young. Kiner-Falefa, that's a veteran. He's been around the league. He's been around the block a time or two. He's not getting any better at defense.
Plus, it's the worst kept secret in the organization that the plan is to ultimately shift Volpe to second base and have Peraza be the full-time shortstop.
Well, yeah. Well, I think Volpe kind of ruined that plan in spring training. I think the Yankees' plan coming into the year was to try to trade Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, give Peraza the job at shortstop full-time. And I think, you know, Peraza, he didn't look bad in spring training, but he didn't really put up the numbers.
Right.
I mean, I liked what I saw from him, which was fine. And now I think Anthony Volpe just played so well in spring training that they kind of took that decision out of his hands.
Well, what is it in Hal Steinbrenner and or Brian Cashman's head that they can't just admit they made a mistake and just DFA Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, Aaron Hicks?
I don't know. Because again, he has no trade value. Nobody's giving up. It's going to be Isaiah Kiner-Falefa for cash and a player to be named later. You know, there's no... Yeah. Oh, this team is in desperate need of a major league caliber shortstop. Not a good one, but someone who can play every day and contribute on offense. Like, he's not that. He isn't that.
I don't know. If I'm Cash and I'm working the phones, I'm saying I will take literally anything. Just take this guy off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd be doing the same thing. I'd call every GM in the league, just like every GM should be calling Shohei Ohtani. Brian Cashman should be calling every GM right now. I mean, like, can I get like a bag of peanuts for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa? Just take the money away. Give me a bag of peanuts.
They can do the Dave Winfield thing and get traded for a steak dinner.
I would be fine with that.
You guys know that story, right?
I vaguely know that story. So, I know the reference, but I never heard the story.
So 1995, the Twins traded Dave Winfield to the then Cleveland Indians for cash and a player to be named later. And so they're out to dinner, either in Cleveland or Minnesota, and they're trying to figure out, like, okay, like, who are we going to send over? Who are we going to send over? Cleveland execs looked to Minnesota's executives and just said, you know what? Just pay the dinner tab, and we'll call it even.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's how I imagine those deals going down with players to be named later. Or just kind of like GM sitting around being like, I don't know. I feel like people are going to kind of slam me for getting fleeced in this trade that I really want to make. Why don't you throw in somebody that no one's ever going to hear from again?
All right. So now I know that whenever you get a front office job, I can call every GM and tell them that your asking price is 2 boxes of Thin Mints.
Listen, I'll take it. 2 boxes of Thin Mints for Isaiah Kiner-Falefa would be a trade up. I would be doing the fleecing.
Yeah.
That's like an LI Yankees King level trade equity.
I despise Thin Mints with all my soul, and I would make that trade yesterday.
even for the Thin Mints.
Yeah, well, my wife likes them, so that'll do it. Let's talk about Clay Holmes. Mariano Rivera spoiled several generations of Yankees fans because we figure, okay, Aroldis Chapman's gone, heart attack's over. Clay Holmes, it's just a different kind of heart attack. So, is he, Alec, what do you think? Is he okay?
I mean, yeah. Sinkers are such field pitches. he's not the only one who's gonna have those moments where, you know, you just can't find it. And I think that's just the position in general now. You're not gonna have automatic guys like Mariano Rivera was, or like maybe Trevor Hoffman, or like whoever. This is the nature of closers now, where they have electric stuff, and probably 80% of the time they don't know where it's going. You know, my connection to major league hitting before I changed jobs, you know, I've heard him and his hitting coach, and you know, I've sat in on the conversations as well, talk about like half the time any of the pitchers don't know where anything's going. So, you know, that's just how it is now. You're trained to throw hard and get a shit ton of movement. And, you know, instead of like trying to hit a specific spot as if you're Greg Maddux or John Smoltz or, you know, Tom Glavine, you know, it's just kind of let's throw in a general area and let the movement do the rest.
Way to name drop the 90s Braves three-headed monster, by the way.
Yeah, well, you know what? I was just watching the King of JUCO, you know, try to hit off the three of them. You know, I don't know if you've seen any of these videos, but like they have this like really cool high-tech machine where you can actually put in the spin rate of every pitch as well as just the speed.
All right.
That's the last thing I watched on YouTube, and it's pretty funny because, you know, obviously he can't touch them. You know, Greg Maddux was throwing 86 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I always say that for those guys who didn't really throw that fast. And you hear people say, oh, this guy's only throwing 86 miles per hour. I could hit that. Dude.
No.
Do you have any idea what that ball is doing on its way to the plate? That is a super bounce ball in like a little metal tube that's going everywhere. You have a better chance if you blindfolded yourself.
James, I was telling Alec the other day how I went to the Jersey Shore last summer just to a batting cage. Like 30 miles per hour just to warm up. My swing is terrible, dude. It's like, it's the fucking worst.
Yeah, I not to brag, can't help but brag. I have a pretty clean swing. I got a decent swing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty happy.
I've played in my fair share of men's leagues.
Yeah. American
Josh,
League.
You've seen my swing.
Yeah, I have seen your swing, you bastard. Yeah.
All right, so Josh is the only one here with a bad swing. He's got a shitty swing. Everyone else can make fun of him.
Yeah, well, I'm an old fat dad. Give me a break. Anyway, so Anthony Volpe's up. Another full count on this kid.
And that's the thing with Volpe, man. He has not. Yeah, he hasn't hit well, but he is still just getting on base. And that's perfectly fine for me at this stage in his development where he – you know, probably wasn't supposed to be on the opening day roster, made it anyway, getting his first taste of Major League Baseball. And at the very least, like, he's getting on. He's not hitting that well, but he's getting on base. And
you can even see as, like, you're watching his journey in his development, you can see his swing developing that he's learning to get more comfortable lifting the ball, but also moving the ball to all fields while trying to get that lift on it. He's like really trying to tailor his swing to major league pitching and figure out how he can play his own adjustments to its strengths.
He's just got so much talent.
Yeah.
I would maybe like to see a little less lift out of him because sometimes he gets under the ball too much. But I mean, like the biggest thing that tells us that he is a capable hitter is just how he approaches every at bat and how he works counts, and his pitch recognition for the most part is very good. It's just, again, we talked about it before, how long did it take Julio Rodriguez and Adley Rutschman to adjust to major league pitching? And then once they did, they took off, and I think we're starting to see that.
Yeah. I like that for Volpe, and the thing that I always say about the Yankees and the thing that, you know, has been shown to be true with past drafts and past prospects they've traded for is I think the Yankees more than anything value guys who control the strike zone very well. They see that as a tool that you can't really develop. You either have it or you don't, and you can make changes and get better. But if you're a guy like an Aaron Judge, like an Anthony Volpe, like an Anthony Rizzo, even a little bit, not so much him, but if you're a guy who's going to get on base and is strong enough to hit with power, you got a good frame, you got a good 20 home run frame, the Yankees are going to be interested in you as a draft pick. Thing they look for more than anything is, can this guy control the strike zone, and how does he project as a dominant hitter, as a damage hitter?
Josh, I said this in our group chat, and I firmly do believe it. I think Volpe's player comp is Trey Turner. Maybe not so much as as crazy of a high batting average kind of dude, but with the right amount of just good contact, speed, and probably same power output.
I can definitely see that happening. As if he can start getting consistent line drives off the sweet part of the bat and just start, you know, hitting those consistent hard singles to the gaps and steal a double, but he can already steal the bases pretty well. But yeah, I mean, Trey Turner, he's definitely not outside the realm of possibility, at least in terms of Volpe.
And like Volpe's must watch TV on the base paths.
Oh yeah. That's where, in fact, I want MLB to start using that new rule they're trying in the Atlantic League, where you basically get a designated runner. You can get one guy on your bench and you can put him in once an inning for as a runner, just a runner. And you can put him in as much as you want and then take him right back out. If Volpe ends up being bad, I don't hate that as his role. If he ends up not being able to hit at the major league level, I am A-okay with him being the guy who is just, okay, Giancarlo Stanton got the first base he walked. Let's send Volpe out there again.
And Stanton was never on the injured list again.
Then he would really only have to hit. That would truly be his only job in the entire world.
Speaking of dumb rules, how about this double hook DH thing that they mentioned as well among those rule changes?
So dumb, so stupid.
Yeah, there's one guy in our group chat who's an ardent national leaguer who's like, oh yeah, I like this rule.
Because no. he wants to see the DH abolished.
He wants to go back to the days when starting pitchers threw more than five innings. Like, okay, like I get it. But what if, okay, say the Yankees in the first inning fucking teed off on Griffin Canning. Goodbye, Shohei Ohtani, for the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's stupid. That's like Shohei Ohtani is the face of the league right now. That's what it is. There's no Fernando Tatis, no Aaron Judge. It's Shohei Ohtani. Like, you should be doing everything to get him more at-bats.
I get what, if it's true that it's to limit the use of like an opener, I kind of get it. But now I feel like we're getting to the point where Manfred is just like, oh, wow, I've gained so much traction with these changes. Let's just see what else I can get away with. When it's just like, well, let's take a step back and question whether that's where we really need to make the change. Because and I mentioned this, Josh, I think today or yesterday, but like, with the way that the pace of these games are going, which I love, by the way.
It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, like, the change should be get rid of the runner on second again. Like, get rid of that.
Yeah, absolutely. I still hate that rule. I still hate it.
It's a bad rule.
You want to speed up the pace of play, and they always, I don't know why Major League Baseball does it. They go to time of game as the defaults for, like, we got to make the game shorter. But no, it was always, we need to make the games more exciting. I'll sit here for five fucking hours and watch baseball. If it's a good game, it's a close game, and the games are moving, we're not taking, you know, a minute between every pitch. Like, and that's why I really like pitch clock, because it's done that, but it's shortened the overall time of the game as a consequence of that. But I think it's just the runner on second rule. Like, those are the innings that you want to be natural, because those are the exciting innings. Those are the extra innings. Those are the one swing could end this game innings.
But James, you gotta understand, with the runner on the second rule, it's all set up so people can do a more sacrifice bunts, which is what you want in a
shut
inning.
You shut up right now. I don't want to hear you again for the rest of this podcast. Do not bring up bunting to me ever. You fucking know I hate bunting. You know I hate it. And you know that
there's
I hate A-Rod
for
talking about bunting
bunts
all the time. Okay, there's a time and a place. There is.
Yeah.
But it's never when A-Rod says it is. Not one
That's
time.
That's very true.
Is it when A-Rod says it is. For a guy who hit almost 696 career home runs. And he's sitting there on Sunday Night Baseball.
Can we count on one hand? A-Rod.
Yeah, it's Sunday Night Baseball, K-Rod, like, oh, we're trying to get the Manning thing going, but it doesn't really work because this is a different game. And also, Michael K and Alex Rodriguez, not funny people. Not funny. Oh my god, I completely lost track. But yeah, Alex Rodriguez, 696 home runs. He's on Sunday Night Baseball saying, "I would like to see him try to bunt against the shift for a hit here." Shut up, man. You wouldn't.
Notable bunter, wouldn't. Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah, no, prolific bunter. He probably bunted like 10 times in his entire.
I was gonna say we could probably count it on one hand.
Yeah, I'm gonna look that up. How many times did Alex Rodriguez bunt?
That's why you like King of Juco, because he says screw bunting, just hit bombs.
Yeah, that's how you should play baseball, man. That's the exciting way to do it. Nobody cares about a bunt.
Wait, who says that?
The King of Juco I was mentioning.
Oh, yeah, all right.
A-Rod had zero sacrifice bunts for the first 15 seasons of his career.
Wow.
Now, shut up about bunting. Don't tell anybody to fucking bunt.
That isn't.
I'll tell you to bunt in like your men's league games.
No, I would never. If we had agreed upon that beforehand on my men's league team, like there's gonna be no bunting here. Like we'd like to win. Winning would be nice, but let's not pretend like this is the fucking World Series. You know, it's 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. We're all hungover as shit. James worked until 3 o'clock last night because he's bartending, and it's 8 a.m. on a Sunday. So let's all swing the fucking bat.
Okay, great. You know, let's shift back to pitching. Clark Schmidt is terrible, and I want him gone. He has all the stuff. Like, the stuff is there. He doesn't know how to use it. Why? He is a reliever. I don't even know if I want him in that role. I'm at the point now where I just kind of want to designate him for assignment. He's like this guy back in the 90s, Brian Boringer, who, yeah, the stuff theoretically is there, but you don't ever want him in the game because he's just terrible. And I feel Clark Schmidt has become that guy.
I loved Clark Schmidt in the beginning when it was clear that this is somebody who's just here as an emergency starter. Like, we're not trying to make him a bullpen arm. We're still trying to develop him, but we're not trying to make him the everyday fifth starter. And now it's just like, all right, he's got absolutely nothing going for him. Hard hit rate, 58.3% this year, over half of the balls. Over half of them that have been
at least we know hard. Like none of that came from the Cleveland game.
yeah
like, so it's just like, listen, he's just, it didn't work out for the Yankees. Maybe Clark Schmidt is he's an Arizona Diamondback, a fourth starter for them, or a Colorado Rocky. I maybe somebody else can use him, but it's not the Yankees.
I mean, it just, a part of me is frustrated because it just strikes me as another highly touted prospect the Yankees had who,
especially pitching prospects.
Yeah. But they just yo-yoed him in this, like, this middle ground of not sure what they want to do with him. And then all of a sudden, when it's actually time to be like, hey, let's figure out what you have, it's like, well, you're a little too late on that. You know, it's Miguel Andujar after his, you know, American League Rookie of the Year runner up season. It's Tyro Estrada. It's all these guys who impressed in the small sample sizes, but instead of just being like, okay, here's more responsibility, take with it what you will and show us what you have, they're just like, now we're going to keep you in this like weird middle ground of AAA.
You're our sixth starter. You're number six.
Well, like, in fairness to Schmidt, though, I do wonder if when all is said and done with his time with the Yankees, assuming he doesn't turn it around, I'm wondering if the autopsy of it all will be that losing that 1 year of development in 2020 and then having to debut that year just because the Yankees needed the bodies really messed with him.
It could have.
Yeah.
I guess only he would really know the answer to that and the Yankees.
I mean, he's never going to say out now that it did.
No chance.
Yeah.
Still got a career to make for himself. He's still got to tell other teams like, hey, no, I am a good pitcher. Trust me.
Yeah, I got this.
Anyway. It is a shame, but it's every time he's taken the mound, it feels like an automatic loss.
Yeah,
it's not ideal.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the state of the Yankees' young pitching is such that they kind of have no choice but to keep trotting him out there.
Yeah, the thing is, it would be great if the Yankees staff was fully healthy and you could slot, you know, Brito, Clark Schmidt into that AAA role. And Schmidt is maybe at this point a little too old for it, a little too experienced at the major league level. But that's what I'm looking for when you say, you know, you need 10 pitchers to win a World Series. You do. Throughout the course of the season, you're going to need extra arms. I just, Clark Schmidt is in that weird middle area where he's still got a free agency to play for, but he hasn't really shown it at the major league level yet. He's not really in the rotation, but he's not really not in the rotation. He's back and forth, the bullpen, the production's not there. It's just, there's so much that's just out of control for Clark Schmidt. There's just, how is he going to get comfortable on the mound? He knows that he's not here to stay. He knows that as soon as Luis Severino comes back, he's gone. And he knows as soon as Nestor Cortes Jr. comes, or not Nestor, Carlos Rodon comes back, he's gone. It's a tough situation for him.
Yeah, I mean, the Rodon injuries are starting to get a little frustrating. And, I mean, maybe it's just me who noticed this, but I can't help but think that he came into camp looking a little heavy. And I'm wondering if maybe that has something to do with his back locking up or just the injuries in general.
Good. I think Yankee fans forgot that we even have Carlos Rodon. I think they forgot he's even on the team.
Oh, yeah. I had to remind myself the other day.
We knew when they signed him it was a high risk.
Yeah.
High risk, high reward. Like the dude.
It's also worth noting, like, he played in San Francisco. That is a massive, massive ballpark.
Yeah.
That certainly has helped him over the career.
So,
although
so
he's not going to be like Cy Young, I don't think, for the Yankees, but I think he'll end up being good.
You'd be surprised. His career numbers, like, not just in Yankee Stadium, but also just across the AL East, it's like low mid threes. And his ERA against the Astros, I think, is sub two.
That's good. And again, I would absolutely take a low threes ERA from Carlos Rodon. If that's what we get from him, I'm signing up 100 times out of 100.
I'd take a mid-high threes ERA from Carlos Rodon.
I can't spell. I'm just trying to look up his stats now.
Oh,
always looking up stats.
Like you do.
Well, I keep that baseball spawn on me.
Yeah. Oh, pivoting. How long have you been back downstate?
About an hour and a half.
You only got back today?
Yeah. Yeah. I was planning on coming back tomorrow, and I was going to do the podcast from Binghamton. And then around 2 o'clock, it's just like, you know what? Like, I'm not doing anything today. I'll just go.
So what, was all your stuff packed up already?
A bunch of it. I'm only here for a few days. I'm going back up to Binghamton. But for now, I got most of my stuff back down here and, you know, figure out what's next, figure out where I'm going to go. Hopefully not Iowa or Montana. I already turned down a couple job offers. For
there
that.
You go.
It's just
not
going to be out there.
You should just, I don't know, go outside Yankee Stadium and teach a bunting workshop to the children.
Shut up. Shut up. You know, I haven't even made one old joke since we've been here the entire time.
I'm
hearing from you is bunting.
Hey, you know what? I made the old joke myself when I put on these blue light glasses, okay?
That's true. Listen, I do that too, though.
Okay,
come on. I got old person vision too.
You know what you don't have, though? You don't have Sal's.
No, I'll probably, if I end up going to the city at all this weekend, I'll probably go way out of my way to get some Sal's.
Yeah, well,
I would take an hour long detour to get Sal's. I would do that. Like, I'll text all my friends, be like, hey, we're going to hang out downtown. I'll be like, cool. I'll be there an hour and a half.
Alec, next time you're in the city, I got to take you to Sal's.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
The best pizza on earth. Guaranteed.
It is.
There is certified. When I was in upstate New York for school, there was a local place called Sal's. So I always liked the sound of that.
Oh, it's a good pizza name for sure.
Oh, yeah.
That's top tier pizza name.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd like to see Anthony Rizzo do with his post-playing career. I'd like to see him finish out his career as a Yankee. I think that'd be nice. I think the city has really accepted him. Then open up a pizza place across the street in the Bronx. That'd be the most poppin' pizza of all time.
Not even a pizza place, just like an Italian deli.
Yeah, but it can't be fancy. That's the big thing. It can't be fancy. It's got to be for the people. And I think Anthony knows that. I'll double check with him, but I think he knows that.
No, I'm talking like Satriali's on the Sopranos levels.
Yeah. No, that'll work. We can get that done.
Anyway, going back to the Yankees, what was last year's? Oh, yeah, the Twin Series. It was kind of surprising that, now granted, the first game, Johnny Brito had literally nothing working. One family member texted me.
Everybody has those days.
Just freaking out. It's like, oh God, like, this guy's garbage. He's supposed to be good. Like, oh my God, this is terrible. We're supposed to beat the Twins. And I said, no, you're just seeing a textbook example of a rookie pitcher who has nothing working for him on a given night.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it is.
He doesn't know how to work out of it yet.
I'll throw a number at you guys. Aside from Johnny Brito, all other Yankee starters for the rest of the series, 1.22 ERA.
It's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, Nestor's still nasty. Like, I was so worried he was going to, like, regress hard this year, but no, he's like picked up right where he left off. It seems that this is his thing right now.
I expected some pitch clock regression with him because of all the crazy stuff that he was doing. And, you know, he can't really do most of that stuff anymore. And they banged Luis Garcia from the Astros for the same stuff.
Yeah.
Or he can't really do that deceptive thing anymore. I was a little worried about that because that's his game, right? That his game is the deception. He's not throwing at 100 miles an hour. There's no wipeout stuff. He is just a pinpoint control artist who knows how to mess with hitters' timing. But I was a little worried about that. But so far, so good for Nestor Cortes Jr. What a great story.
Hot take. Don't extend Luis Severino and use that money to extend Nestor Cortes instead.
Got to see what the money for Severino is going to be.
I can't imagine it's going to be a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we're going to get a good deal on him because he's barely pitched. And who knows? Maybe he comes back and has – a near Cy Young caliber season.
Even then, he's probably going to get Jameson Taillon money, maybe between 15 and 18.
Oh yeah, it's not going to be like the Garrett Cole deal by any sense. But it's he's going to get a nice contract if he pitches well this year, even though he's been so injured in the past.
And it seems like he wants to be a Yankee.
He's
just kind of one of those guys where it's like, can you imagine him on any other team? Because
not really.
I really can't. And he's close with a lot of people on the team, you know, Judge and Torres included. You know, you kind of saw him and chumming it up with Elizaga with the gun, the hat the other day, which was hilarious. He just seems to really love being a Yankee. And I could see him wanting to be like, hey, as long as we're in contention, I'll stay here. Cause imagine if he's on that World Series winning team. You know, he's that homegrown prospect who stuck it out and maybe wasn't as available as he could have been, but I mean, he was really one of the first guys that came up and was electrifying.
Oh yeah, it's kind of crazy to think now of Luis Severino as like a Yankees roster elder statesman. He's the guy who's been around for a while. He knows everybody in the clubhouse because he's barely pitched. He's had so much downtime with injuries that you don't really see him. And you kind of forget did he debut in 2016? He's been here this whole time.
Those injuries also talk about stuff that came out of nowhere. Right.
Yeah. And it's the progressive stuff too. My elbow's kind of flaring up and now my shoulder's flaring up even worse. Now it's my back and my leg.
The groin.
Yeah. It's like everything he does in rehab leads to another injury.
Yeah, well, look at Carlos Rodon. He was rehabbing a forearm. Now his back's hurt.
Yeah. Not thrilled about that. It's not great. Because that's what we've been looking at with the Yankees for so long is just the health. The health. Yeah. You know, I started this podcast in 2018. Okay? 2018. If I had a dollar for every episode we did about, this guy's fucking hurt again. Now this guy's hurt. Dude, I'd have so much money. I'd have hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, hundreds of dollars to spend on
that's like all we talk about with the Yankees. Just stay healthy.
And
how hard is it?
My frustration comes from Josh.
Yeah. I will grant the health and the injuries are infuriating.
And we go out, we bring in Eric Cressy, we revamp the whole training staff, and we think, okay, the injury stuff, it's got to be behind us now. We've got the best in the biz, Eric Cressy. That's number one. That's the best guy. And now,
but how many of these guys came in pre-Eric Cressy, though?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Oh, did Taylor Ward get hit? Or no, Nito.
Yeah, he's made some pretty good contact tonight.
Is Taylor Ward even on the Angels anymore?
He's up right now. Just took a strike from King.
Yeah, that's the other thing with being in Binghamton for last year. I feel like my baseball knowledge went from I more or less know the result of every meaningful pitch that happened today in any game just because of how much I was watching and how much I was following. And now I feel like, is this guy still on this team? I don't really remember.
I was listening to John Jastrzemski's New York, New York podcast the other day, and he was talking about the Mets Oakland series, and he said, name four players on the Oakland A's. And I couldn't.
Dude, they don't even have Christian Pasha anymore.
No, I came up with Shea Langeliers just because it's a weird name. Adam Aller and
AJ Puck.
No, he's on the Marlins now.
He's on the Marlins now?
He's Marlin now.
That was part of the Luzardo trade.
Yeah, dude, I've got nothing.
Yeah, Laureano, that was one. And then he also did a Tony Kemp.
Tony Kemp and Ramon Laureano. Those are probably the only two guys in the A's I know.
Oh, anymore. And because they're ex-Yankees, J.P. Sears and Ken Walnichuk.
Oh, yeah. I talked so much shit about J.P. Sears before he pitched against the Mets last week. Did you? My cousins are Mets fans. So I was looking at it and I was like, you know, we like to do the no runs first inning thing. That's one of our favorite bets. Because it pretty good return rate. I'll say that. But we were looking at it and be like, really? Like J.P. Sears against – it was Kodai Senga, who hadn't pitched very well. But we were kind of banking on a little rerun. Because the stuff has been good. The splitter's been really nasty. The fastball's been good. But he hadn't been pitching well. And Oakland is such a big ballpark. They were like, you know what? Maybe he gets a bump today. But – and they were all like, okay, so let's take the no runs first inning. And sitting there and be like, I've seen J.P. Sears pitch. Maybe we don't. I think he ended up pitching pretty well that night too. I think he gave up two or three runs.
I'll show you some pitching. Check out this last pitch from Michael King that you're gonna see in a second.
I feel like I'm behind too now because I'm waiting for it. Just to keep everyone up to date now, the shine has worn off on Gleyber Torres. He's won for his last 20.
Yeah,
that tracks.
Oh, that's a dirty pitch.
Yeah. Listen, I love Gleyber. I love him. I really wanted Gleyber to be very good. I wanted him to be a perennial all-star. And it seems like it's just not going to happen at this point. And I was hoping maybe this year he got off to such a good start and like, all right, maybe he's got something going this year where he can be like that 270 hitter with 25 home runs. Maybe he can be that. He's looked pretty good defensively this year. I'll give him that.
Maybe he's just having his annual August slump just in April.
Maybe.
So then what do we call it when the August slump actually comes to hit?
Poverty.
Yeah. That's when they start thinking about making Anthony Volpe the full-time second baseman.
Yeah.
Wait.
What I thought the Yankees' plan was coming into the offseason was to move Gleyber Torres at the trade deadline this year. I didn't think they were going to start with Volpe on the roster until he played so well. But I thought they would hold him until kind of close to the trade deadline and have him taking everyday opportunities at second base and then have Peraza as the full-time shortstop. But of course, Anthony Volpe just had to go and play well in spring training, ruin all the plans.
Also, a friend of the pod, Max Greenfield, told me that.
Love Max.
Yeah, Max told me that a lot of the reason Torres stuck around this offseason was because there was still so much uncertainty about DJ LeMahieu's toe.
Right.
That's another part. That's another part of it. Yeah. And DJ's looked good too. He's looked
He really
fine.
Has. Yeah. He's definitely starting to slow down with age a little bit where the power's not 100% there, but he's still good to poke a single here and there and get that just enough line drive on the ball to lift it over the infield.
I think we'll see DJ kind of just be go oppo with the fastball. And then if they hang an off speed pitch, that's when he's going to pull it for power.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, you know, that's what he needs. That's what we need him to be. We don't need him to be hitting home runs left and right. But
I like slotting him into the middle of the order too, instead of lead off. It's just because he is that contact guy. And I know contact is less important in baseball now than it used to be because of, you know, the power of all and pitchers are so good now that it's not an efficient form of offense to string singles together and whatnot. But it's kind of nice to like get through that first time through the lineup and you're sitting there thinking, all right, well, Anthony Volpe's on second. Say Anthony Rizzo's on first. Like DJ LeMahieu's up. We feel pretty good about a chance to put a run on the board here.
Yeah. And, you know, with the ban and the shift, you know, I think it's going to serve teams well to have a little bit more of those high contact guys because we've seen it. We've seen these hits that have gone for outs in the past find the hole. So, seen it with him multiple times.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah. So, at what point do you guys think Anthony Volpe is staying in the leadoff spot? You think we're nearing that? Because I feel like we are.
He's my future, the leadoff spot for sure. That's the guy I want ahead of Aaron Judge and Anthony Rizzo and Giancarlo Stanton. Just because of the havoc he can create on the bases alone. And the attention that he draws from the pitcher, just being on first base or being on second base, even. He's not afraid to steal third base. He did it today. So I he's the leadoff guy of the future. And I just, I think when Harrison Bader comes back, they might flirt with him in the leadoff spot. They might flirt with putting DJ LeMahieu back in the leadoff spot. Because once Bader comes back, you do get that lineup extended a little bit further for having him in there instead of, say, Kiner Falefa or Aaron Hicks, or even maybe Franchi Cordero might get a few less at-bats, even though he's hit very well this year. Eventually, he'll come back down to earth. They always do when you get these, like, hot streaks. It's like, oh, Franchi Cordero, he's the new Cameron Maybin. And then you get to the next level and you're like, okay. So Cameron Maybin went back to being regular Cameron Maybin. He's not like the 300 hitter anymore. That'll happen to Franchi Cordero eventually. I'm just going to enjoy the ride while it's still here. But I'd like to see them make Anthony Volpe the regular leadoff man. I think if you could put Bader and LeMahieu later on in the lineup, if Volpe's getting on base in the top spot, I think it's a no-brainer you leave him there.
I think you absolutely do that, just because then, like, it's automatic good pitches to hit. They can't just really junk them around. Oh,
Oh, what did Shohei Ohtani do?
You'll see.
Oh no!
Why is mine still in fucking commercial? What the hell?
That's crazy. Yeah. I thought I was on a worse delay.
James, I need to see your I'm waiting for James' real-time reaction.
The crazy thing is we're all watching on Amazon Prime. Like, it's not like some people are watching on cable and some people are streaming. We're all watching on Amazon Prime.
What the hell, Bezos?
Ooh, that was a great pitch.
Yes, it was.
Absolutely fooled them.
I'll go spoil it for you. Wandy struck out Ohtani swinging.
Did you happen to listen to Talking Yanks?
I swear to Christ, dude. I swear to Christ, I'm watching this on MLB on MLB.tv instead of Amazon Prime, and I have now rewound it twice, and every time Peralta releases the ball, it freezes, and then it cuts to Ohtani walking back to the dugout, so I can't see the damn pitch.
Oh, no.
God damn it.
That was a good pitch. It was a changeup down and in.
Okay.
Did you happen to listen to Talking Yanks today? Because they had Aaron Boone on.
Oh, no, I haven't listened yet today.
He was saying how apparently Wandy Peralta is like, he's not like a psychopath, like a crazy person, but like he's like Tommy Canely. He's just a little bit wild.
Yeah, I remember Canely was on R2C2 right after he resigned, and he mentioned how like how people made a point of getting him and Wandy together.
Yeah, because they're both crazy people.
Yeah.
I'm going to be so happy to have Tommy Canely back when he finally is, like, back.
I just pointed out, I wrote saying the Yankees should bring him back 2 weeks before they actually did.
Just to be in the clubhouse, just to be around?
Yeah, just what get Tommy Canely. Everyone loves him.
Yeah. It wasn't 2021. It must have been last year when he was still with the Dodgers. That was like my big thing looking at the Yankees, like the big problem. And again, for a team that won 100 games, the big problem was, as like, you know what? The vibes really aren't that high. Like, it seems like this is just strictly business and nobody's really having fun out there. Like, that's when you need Tommy Canely, man. Tommy Canely can break any slump. He can get any hot streak going. Like, he's just that dude that makes everybody feel good in the clubhouse.
So in other words, you need Tommy Canely back in there with Wandy Peralta and just have absolute chaos in the dugout.
And strap GoPros on them.
You know, I recently did watch that one video of Tommy Canely in spring training right before COVID, where he's just looking for Chad Green and he just walks
around.
Chad!
No, I remember that video. It was the first time I found out that Zach Britton was funny. Because before that, Zach Britton was just this mythical closer from the Baltimore Orioles who was should have pitched in the playoff game, the wild card game, should have pitched. Buck Showalter didn't put him in, but he was this mythical closer. And then you watch that video and was like, Zach Britton's funny? Like, he can make content too? And it was great. And I love that. And that Yankees team, the was that 2019 or 2020 that video came out? I don't even remember.
That was 2020.
Yeah, because that was before the season abruptly ended. I remember thinking, like, this team is like, they've got the good vibes. Like, everybody is friends with each other. Everybody's playing for each other. And that makes such a huge difference when it's not just like, you look at the Yankees and they're an actually boring team. Like, they're not a fun team to watch. Very good, very talented, a lot of interesting things happening there, but it's not like they don't have fun on the field. But I'd like Tommy Canley because he does have fun on the field and he wears just the tightest pants in the league, except maybe Walker Buehler, who I don't know how he gets circulation of blood to his feet with the pants that he wears.
Well, now we know why he's really on the injured list. It's not Tommy John surgery.
No. He lost all blood flow to his extremities.
Yeah. Although I will say this about the Yankees. Yeah, they're a boring team, but like that doesn't mean that as a team, they still all care about each other and they all get along.
Yeah. But again, there's like the difference between like, we're very friendly coworkers and like, oh, this team is like off days. Like we're all together. Road trips. We're all together. That kind of thing where you got bullshit going on the team plane. Nobody's just like getting ready on sleep or, you know, reading, doing some boring shit. And again, I don't know what the Yankees team plane is like. I imagine it'll be more fun with Tommy Canley on it though.
Canley on R2C2, he was telling the story about how they just played high card at one point on the plane. And guys weren't sleeping. They were just sort of sitting around the table watching it, and it was just going like,
And dude, the thing with the fantasy football league, the one of my favorite stories that Lindsay Adler ever wrote.
That's
the kind of stuff that I feel like we haven't really heard about since Tommy Canley left. So maybe that's going on behind closed doors and everyone's keeping it all hush hush. Maybe the problem was that Tommy Canley just didn't know how to not talk to the New York media.
Maybe so.
That's my favorite problem to have, though.
Yeah. Now, one of my favorites who's up bat right now, Oswaldo Cabrera.
I love Oswaldo.
He's Donnie Rojas.
He projects for me in my mind as like a consistent 110 OPS plus guy, like barely above league average, but plays a bunch of different positions and plays good defense. Doesn't really hit great, but hits enough. And that's totally okay with me. Because he's got a great swing from the left side.
He might be, for real, our Ben Zobrist.
I'm down for that. I'm 100% down from that. Now that having a Ben Zobrist is like a normal thing, and it's not just having Ben Zobrist actually.
Yeah. Oh, I love Ben Zobrist.
Yeah. Let's bring Tyler Wade back. Let's replace Isaiah Kiner-Falefa with him.
We're not bringing back Tyler Wade.
He's most the handsome most man handsome man in baseball.
There we go.
He's handsome, Josh. Get over it.
He was very handsome, but my flow and my hair was at its best last year was better than his, so we all know it.
Wow. Okay. That's a claim that has been made.
Yeah.
Hey, you kind of have substantiated it, pal.
It's a claim that has been made out loud.
That's like the longest my hair has ever been, like, too. It was terrible. I'm never doing that again, ever.
Oh, yeah. I grew out my hair real long during the pandemic. It's pretty long right now. It's getting a little crazy.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Some fair lettuce up there. I wear a hat 99% of the time. Like, I wore hats in the studio. I wore hats when I was hanging out with the mayor. Like, I just wore hats.
What was that like, hanging out with the mayor?
I don't think I really appreciated how weird it was to just like be on a first name basis with the mayor of the entire city. Just like once a week, just being at a press conference there and like shooting the shit with him. Like one time we had a press conference. They were building an apartment complex across the street from where the Rumble Ponies play.
Sure.
And so they had a press conference there and the mayor was there. It started raining, so we went inside into the batting cages with the Rumble Ponies because they were involved in the project as well. So the owner, David Sabaka, just let us into the batting cages. And me and the owner of the Binghamton Rumble Ponies are sitting there trying to peer pressure the mayor of Binghamton into taking some hacks on camera because the TV stations were there too. And it didn't hit me until afterwards that I was sitting there thinking like, I'm pretty sure I just tried to bully the mayor into embarrassing himself on local television, and I did it with the owner of the Binghamton Rumble Ponies.
Nice. Now the Rumble Ponies Stadium, do they share it with the university?
No, actually, fun fact, the university stadium, 5 times more expensive, way nicer, because they got an anonymous donation of $50 million specifically for a baseball stadium. Now, why anybody would donate $50 million to the Binghamton University baseball team, beyond me, because it's not even like they're good in their division. Like, they're perfectly average in their division. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. Like, they play in, what is it? I can't even remember the name of the conference anymore. It's that's how little I think of this conference. and they play in a $50 million baseball stadium because somebody just gave it to them.
ESNY's managing editor, James Cratch, told us this story the other day. Speaking of college stadiums, the reason Rutgers baseball isn't on TV that much is that they pretty much play on the equivalent of a little league field that has bleachers and not seats. Oh, wait, it gets worse. It gets worse. The Somerset Patriots wanted to build a stadium on land in Piscataway that was owned by Rutgers. And the whole plan was like, look, this way you can share the stadium with us. You can have more TV infrastructure for your college baseball team. You can up your national brand. Like, it will lease it from you, all this, all that. Rutgers said no.
That's kind of dumb.
Kind of dumb?
It's kind of dumb. Why wouldn't you want to play in a nice new stadium?
Alec, you played Division III, and I'm pretty sure your stadium was nicer than what Rutgers has right now.
Yeah, because we had like a couple million dollar donation for a turf field. But like, we would play teams. So when our field was being constructed, we didn't really have a place to play. So we would just play at the Hudson Valley Renegades Stadium.
Oh, and Fishkill?
What's that?
Fishkill?
Yeah, yeah. Or I guess like technically Wappinger Falls.
All right.
So my freshman and sophomore year, we would play there. It was awesome. We get like access to the clubhouse and we, you know, go under the tunnel and shit. It was really cool. And then every year we would play like NYU, and NYU plays at the Cyclones Stadium in
Colorado. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know they played there either. I didn't know NYU had a baseball team.
Yeah. Small
D3. I can't imagine it's very good.
They're actually not bad. They're not bad. I think they beat us, but we also weren't that good. So
yeah.
But hey, you know, we could big league it because we'd show up, you know, early and we're doing our pregame and we have access to the visitors' locker room. And so like we're sitting in lockers with our shit hanging up and, you know, and then we come out in the tunnel and we go up the steps and then, yeah, we're right there.
Dude, that's nice.
Yeah. It was.
Now I miss being a player.
I still don't.
I once played on a field that had light poles about 100 feet in right field from home plate in the field of play. Yeah, so not quite as nice.
Yeah, there was a.
Yeah, that's not like the minors right there.
I think we played a. I think it was like a SUNY school in the city, and it was the weirdest field that I've ever played at because right field was, I kid you not, maybe about 275 from home plate, and the fence was on top of a hill. Like,
I think
like
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I found the place. I can go back through the archives of my college and I can find the name of the place, but I'm not talking like Towles Hill in Houston. I mean, like, this hill was 45 degrees up and then the fence with a stone curb at the base of the hill. And the ground rules were from the foul pole to one light pole in right center field. Anything towards the foul pole was a ground rule double if you hit it over the fence. So my teammate hit one over the fence towards on the center field side of that pole for a home run. I went fucking 2 for 3 with 2 doubles over the right. And you know what? Both times I'm like, screw it. I'm pimping the shit out of this. Freshman in college, I hit one technically over the fence. I'm like, I'm going to jog to second base. I don't give a shit. It's a stupid field.
Flip it. Gotta flip it.
Stupid field, stupid rules.
Did this stupid field also have an oldest shit scoreboard out in right field?
It might have.
I think that's where Columbia plays their home games.
Is it really?
Dude, that's crazy. I tried playing in the city one time. I remember it was John Lindsay Park on the Lower East Side. And I was just trying out for this team. And I had made the team by the time this happened, but I'm throwing a bullpen. And I'm like maybe 12, 13 pitches in, and I take a weird step and I feel this twinge in my hip, and I definitely hurt it bad. I ended up not playing again after that. That was actually the last time I played. But while I was feeling that, it was mid pitch, launched a ball right onto fucking First Avenue.
Nice.
Right over the backstop, right over, because I was throwing hard too. I was all the way through my motion until the point where I was planting my foot, and then when I planted my foot, I just let go of the ball, and it went right onto the road.
All right, now so Josh, this was actually in the Bronx, South Field in the Bronx.
South Field.
Yeah, that's what shows up on.
Okay, I'm looking this up right now. Hold on.
I don't know how anybody gets into baseball in New York City. The dimensions of the fields are just insane, let alone like just the amount of room you need to play baseball. Like you can just dribble a basketball anywhere. You work on your handling.
My first ever college game was against Yeshiva. And like, so that was my first time in, you know, playing baseball. I'm from Florida. So, you know, I went to upstate New York to play baseball.
Yeah.
You know, small liberal arts college.
Your first game was that early March, mid March.
Yep. Well, so here's the funny thing. I had 103 degree fever going into the game. And so my school had just started the varsity program for the first time in 75 years. Like they were rebooting it. It was a whole thing. And so I got the call to the bump in the first game. And I wake up that morning with 103 degree fever. And I'm like, I'm not going to miss this. I'll pitch through it. So we get to Yeshiva. It's 20 degrees out. I pitch that game. I'm dying. Like, I mean, I am dying. I make it through like five or six innings somehow. We win the game. And then my coach is like, all right, Alec, you're going to DH the second game. When you're not hitting, go into the team bus and stay warm. I'm like, you got it, coach. So I remember
like, somebody come get me when I'm in the hole.
No, seriously. Like I would stand next to the bus driver who's sitting in the bus with me. And we're just watching the game. And when I pick out my spot, I'm like, all right, I gotta go. And there was one time there was a guy on third base. I ran out, put my helmet on, put my gloves on, like first pitch swinging, sacrifice fly. I didn't stop running until I got back into the bus. And then I got bronchitis after that.
Oh, dude. I wonder why playing in 20 degree weather with 103 degree fever. I wonder why you got sick after that.
You know what? That's out of all the things I never did while playing, I never did excuse me. Oh man, they just balk Wandy. It's annoying. I never played a game sick.
Yeah,
it's
an
experience.
It is.
Because you kind of like, I feel like every time I've played some kind of game or run a meet or pitched a game sick, it kind of feels like an out of body experience. Like you blink your eyes and all of a sudden it's the fifth inning.
And it's a tie game now. Great.
Wow, spoilers.
Sorry.
Did Gio do it?
Yeah, it might have been.
Might have been a bad pitch.
Yeah, that was Gio.
Good for Gio. I'm glad he's having some success.
He went and got that one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Just a blooper too. Nothing you can do if you're Wandy there.
That was a cheap balk call though.
Yeah, it certainly didn't help.
Yeah. All right, anyway, folks, that's probably going to wrap it up for us tonight. James, thanks for coming back on, man.
I mean, we're not doing a three-hour podcast?
Nah, not today.
I've got 3 hours of material, my man.
You got 3 hours of material?
No, I don't actually have 3 hours of material.
All right, well, in that case, yeah, go away. We don't want you here anymore. This is my podcast now. Mine.
Unbelievably rude. Unbelievably rude The founder of the Bleacher Creatures. Allison wasn't the founder. She didn't come in until like episode 20.
Yeah. I haven't texted her in a while. I should do that.
Yeah. Anyway. I haven't texted her in a while too. We made plans like 2 months ago to go to the Somerset Patriots game when they were in Binghamton. And I just completely forgot about it. And they were there last week or 2 weeks ago. Whoops, oh, well. My bad. We wanted to see Jason, but
yeah, and pretty soon you'll probably see Spencer there.
Oh yeah, yeah. Listen, at least we can watch minor league baseball games now on MLB TV.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, my cat is like being an absolute brat right now about me.
This wouldn't be an episode of the Bleacher Creatures if there wasn't an appearance by a cat.
Yeah, and Aaron Judge, man, that's all I'm gonna say.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, guys. It was all good to be back.
Yeah, cool. And we will see you next time, guys.